It's time for the Bob Cerace Show, broadcasting live from the Alchemist and Barrister in Princeton on Fox Sports 920 The Jersey. Here's the voice of Princeton football, Cody Kruschel.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Bob Cerace Show here at the Alchemist and Barrister. Pat McCarthy sitting in for Cody Kruschel today, and we are joined, as always, by Tigers head coach Bob Cerace. And Coach, thanks for taking the time joining us. I know you guys just got off the practice field and getting all set up for Lehigh.
Absolutely. You're the Lou Gehrig today. We're going to see if Cody's now Wally Pipp. Big show.
One final non-conference game coming up before that sprint to the Ivy League title. But let's go back to last week. First, your first taste of the Ivy League season up on the road against Columbia. And what was that like for you guys? Obviously, great to get a first win on the road to get 1-0 in the Ivy League. But now moving forward, what did you guys learn from that first game against the Lions?
Yeah, you know, you have three games. You have a travel trip over to Indianapolis. Then you have your home opener. And then, you know, the Ivy League opener is so crucial. You want to start 1-0. We didn't do it the previous year. And it's really hard to play catch-up in a short season where you only play the other seven teams one time. And, you know, I thought we fought hard. I thought we, you know, we're in a tight 13-10 battle and made a number of plays in about an eight-minute span to turn into a 38-10 game. And credit to our players and assistant coaches for the preparation and work they put in.
And Columbia got off to a fast start against you guys with that opening kickoff. And it's the second week in a row we've seen kind of that big play early on. But the defense has really stepped up. And how big is it to hold teams to a field goal after they get that big home run?
Yeah, you don't want those plays to happen, but it's football. There's good opponents, and occasionally, you tip your cap to them, and they do something better than you did. But for the defense to come in a sudden changes type situation with the ball inside the 10-yard line and actually back the kicker up for a more difficult field goal was a terrific play. And, you know, really, I think, led to that next series where we had a nice long 15-play touchdown drive.
So you're 3-0, and your defense has been really good, especially in the second half. When you need to put teams away, how much confidence does it give you and your offense knowing that your defense is going to continue to keep guys out of the end zone and either hold them to 3 points or completely off the board as a whole?
Yeah, you know, we have a very explosive offense, and it's been covered a lot. But one of the keys is getting the ball back to them and getting the ball back to them quickly. And I really believe we've been committed to playing our depth. Guys in camp really stepped up. They're turning that into good performances on a weekly basis. We're going to be tested this Saturday. But I really like how we're practicing and how guys are totally engaged into the preparation.
When you go back to the Columbia game, when you look at the film, what is the one thing that really stood out to you in terms of the offense? You can open up the playbook a little bit against these Ivy League teams, something they may not want to show against these non-conference teams. What was something that really stood out to you?
Yeah, you know, Columbia was giving up 34 or 35 yards a game rushing.
Yep.
And they're a very challenging team to run the ball on the last two or three years since Coach Bagnoli's been there. I thought our offensive line and tight end fullback opened up some really nice holes, and our runners finished 2-3 yards after contact almost on every run, and we were in a lot of second and twos and, you know, turned a second and ten into a third and one. The finish to our runs was exceptional.
The rushing game really did stand out in that game, especially with John Lovett. He hadn't really had a ton of designed runs in the first couple games. Was that something you were kind of keeping in your pocket to get to the Ivy League games?
No, and even on Friday night, a lot of the runs he has to make a decision.
Yep.
Do I give the ball to the running back, or do I throw it, or do I keep it myself as a runner? And they, you know, the first few games, teams were forcing him to give the ball.
Yep.
And after we had really Charlie Volker's averaging nearly 10 yards a carry, Colin Eady's averaging nearly 10 yards a carry, you know, the decisions were made to stop our runners, and John pulled the ball, and he was outstanding in the open field. He had a number of long runs, number of first down runs, but he really kept the chains moving with his athletic ability and effort.
When you think about the luxury that you've had at the quarterback position the last couple of years, you have John and Chad 2 years ago. You have Chad last year. Now you're back to John. How has it changed for you as a play caller in terms of having two dynamically different guys in the quarterback position than having a true pocket passer and now having a guy that can have those RPOs and that can run the ball but can also throw the ball.
Yeah, you know, Chad is a really true NFL dropback passer. He's now playing and on the practice squad with the Arizona Cardinals. And our, you know, our coaches do a great job suiting the offense to the talents of the guy that's the quarterback position. And with Chad, it was a very NFL-style drop-back passing game. With John, John's throwing the ball really well in the drop-back game, but he's really allowed Sean Gleason and the offensive coaches to be more creative in the run game. And we were a good running team last year and a very good passing team. I think our run game has really stepped up a notch in the early season, partly to the fact that our quarterback's a threat to do multiple things with the football.
You talked about the explosive offense, and at one point Columbia had made that a one-possession game. Your defense gets the big stop on the three and out, and then the offense really exploded. Take us through that little six-minute period when you really separated yourselves.
Yeah, we got the stop, we got the ball back, and we really executed a quick, long drive. It was an 80-play drive and took about 2 minutes off the clock. Then we get him into a longer yardage situation, and T.J. Floyd, who's playing great, you know, doing a great job at safety. TJ gets an interception. We get the ball in plus territory. We score quickly on that. So now there's a minute to go in the half. They decide to run a two-minute drive. We get a quick three and out, get the ball back on the 40, and we executed that one-minute drive down to the three-yard line with 4 seconds left. And I was in a tight position. Do you go for it or not? And decided to kick take the points. We were getting the ball after halftime. We get the ball to start the second half. The players made me look good because, you know, three plays later, Colin Edie runs a 66-yard touchdown run, and now it's 38-10. And, you know, we have a good enough defense that as long as we don't turn it over, it's probably going to be a W for us.
Well, Colin was my next question about the depth that he brings to you at the tailback position. Obviously, everybody knows what Charlie can do, and you've mentioned the physical running from Charlie, and I think he showed that in the Columbia game. And then you get the explosion from Colin Edie. What is that like for as a coach, knowing that you can interchange those guys in the backfield and still get a lot of production?
Yeah, they really push each other in a good, healthy, competitive way. They're great teammates, and they're very unselfish. You know, we only have one football, and there's games where Saturday, you know, Friday night, Jesper Horsted has two catches.
Right.
There's other games he has 11 and three touchdowns. There's games where Carlson, the opening game, has a couple of catches. There's games like, you know, last week he has two touchdown catches. Graham Adamitis hasn't caught a pass. And the one true sack we gave up, he was wide open and John didn't have time to throw it to him. You know, our running backs are sharing the load there. And with the scores being what they were in the second half, we haven't played a full game. So they're only averaging 5-6 carries a game, and not one of the guys is complaining. They're totally bought in. They're celebrating with their teammates no matter who gets the touchdown. And I love how Colin's running. He's finishing his runs, and he really has a dynamic ability to make the explosive play.
What do you think about going on the road and opening up the Ivy League schedule with a win? How does that affect the rest of your season moving forward? You get the one gap basically with the non-conference game this weekend, then the six games to follow. But when you look back to that first win in the Ivy League, what does that mean for you guys?
Well, we also played on a Friday night on a short week. So it did give us, you know, Lehigh's coming off a bye. It did give us one extra day to for the coaches to prepare for Lehigh and do a little bit of catch up. But, you know, I think the words that I got from a member of the last undefeated team at Princeton, and we have a long, long ways to go. I'm not saying it because of that.
Sure.
I'm saying it because of the mentorship that John O'Brien gives me was grounded confidence. You know, you have to stay humble. You have to prepare. You have to work hard. But I hope our guys are buying into the things that we are putting in the game plans, and they're working hard to execute those things and knowing that there isn't a circle on our circle W on our schedule. If we do not play well against Lehigh, we are going to lose. If we play well, we have a shot to win, you know, especially considering the schedule they played early on. They are prepared, coming off a bye, to play a great game.
All right, Coach. Well, we will talk about Lehigh a little bit later on in the show. We're going to take our first break from the Alchemist and Barrister, which is proud to host the Bob Surrey Show every Thursday night. Join us here each week for the latest on Princeton football. Enjoy drink and food specials all night. Check out our menus at theamb.com. Eli Stern and Brett Stewart join us next on the Bob Cerace Show. That's next on the Princeton IMG Sports Network.
You're listening to the Bob Cerace Show with Princeton football head coach Bob Cerace. Live from the Alchemist and Barrister on Fox Sports 920 The Jersey.
Welcome back to the Bob Cerace Show here from the Alchemist and Barrister in Princeton, New Jersey. We are now joined by seniors Eli Stern and Brett Stewart. Guys, thanks for taking the time joining us fresh off the practice field and getting all set for Saturday against Lehigh.
Thank you. Yeah, we're happy to be here.
So for you guys, both seniors on the team, and this is a squad that you guys have had a lot of success here in your tenure, an Ivy League title back in 2016 and now a 3-0 start here in 2018. Let's go through the timeline a little bit. We'll start with that 2016 season. For you guys, you know, what was it like to get that Ivy League title and then know that from there you guys had the ability to not only win it once but get multiple titles at that going forward?
Yeah, I think that was that's pretty awesome, you know, knowing that we have the capability to do it. That was awesome. The year before that, we started off really good. We started off 4-0. And then we finished 5-5. You know, like, we didn't really have any confidence at the end of the year there. But next year we came back strong. Our turning point that season was the Lehigh game.
Yep.
We got blown out up there in Lehigh Valley, and after that we kind of just turned things around, and we knew that we were a championship team. We just had to put it together, and once we did, we were scary. That was one of the best years of my life. That was awesome.
Yeah, I think. And I know Brett and I, that was like the first year that we actually started to contribute as sophomores. And I think it was really important for us to feel that dynamic of that team because there was great senior leadership. And I think that's a really important factor in a successful team. You know, we've always had talent here. We'll always work hard. But I really think the difference maker is that leadership. So I think having that as a basis for us and seeing what a successful, you know, leadership year shows you, we were able to at least try to implement it our junior and senior year. And it's really exciting because you think, oh, wow, if that's the X factor, let's try and replicate that. And we have two more years to do it. So it was exciting for us.
Well, as seniors now, what have you guys taken in the last couple years? And what do you guys make sure the younger guys know so that when their time comes to step up, that they have that same leadership that you guys were provided at one point and now are providing?
Yeah, you know, when I was a freshman, I was totally lost. I had no idea what I was doing. So as a senior, I feel like I have an obligation to show them what to do, how to do things right, where to be, do the right things at the right times. Basically, just showing them how to show the ropes of the school. Yeah. You know, like they never been to classes or anything. They don't know how to practice. They learn it. Some kids learn it faster than others. But as a senior, I feel like, because when I was a freshman here, I had tremendous senior leadership. I had Dorian Williams. Yeah. You know, I had. Kamal Brown, we had tremendous senior leadership there, so we try to replicate that the best way as possible.
Yeah, I think seeing those guys take us under their wings, and it's a really special thing, like Brett said, it's not just on the football field, it's in school, it's in social settings, and I think the more that the older guys take the freshmen in, and not, you know, tell them what to do, but show them and really kind of bring them along, it's a really important thing. And through that, you get that kind of buy-in that we were talking about earlier, is that, you know, that team-wide buy-in where, you know, you don't feel young guys pushing against the authority or you know, different aspects of the team. You feel them buying in, and it's a really important dynamic. And I felt it this year, and I know we have as a team, is that, you know, you don't feel that pushback on this team. You feel like everyone is ready to jump into battle with you at any moment. So I hope we're doing a good job so far.
Coming to Princeton and playing sports is probably a lot different of experience than the traditional Division I athlete. For those that are kind of unfamiliar about what it takes to compete in the Ivy League, both in the classroom and on the athletic field, for say a potential recruit or somebody looking that has been here before but maybe played at a different school, what do you think the main difference is between being an Ivy League student athlete and then being a traditional student athlete?
You know, like, we have 4 hours of homework a night. You know, it's something you have to do. If you don't do, you can't play. You have to do your homework. You have to get your rest so you can perform at the optimal level. I don't think it's as hard as people think once you actually get into the groove of it. You know, freshman year, it's impossible. It's almost impossible. You know, there's a lot of times you're like, I don't really know if I can do this. But once you start leaning on the seniors to see what they do, how they do things, you kind of get used to it. You kind of get in the groove, and you kind of just like figure out your way as you go.
I think there's really high expectations, you know, from both sides, from athletics, from academics. I mean, we're the only school in the country that requires a 100-page thesis from every student just to graduate. So I don't think it's reserved for athletes. But the thing is that, you know, the academic departments, they don't ease their expectations because right. they're students. If anything, they, you know, extend them.
Yeah.
Because with those expectations, there's a certain amount of respect. So I think, at least I've seen the academic, you know, the faculty fellows, all of them, they've shown us an incredible amount of respect as we go on this journey to try and, you know, tackle, as you said, this incredible, you know, challenge on both sides. But like Brett said, you know, they do not temper their expectations right. academically for us. And, I've really enjoyed the challenge, but it's not for everyone.
We'll go through the recruiting process in our second segment, and then you guys can kind of give your backgrounds on what made you guys take on that challenge and how it's been. For you guys on the football field, primarily in the special teams, you have the ability to impact a game that might not necessarily show up on the stat sheet, whereas – you know, the tackles are there, but people don't necessarily know where they come from. But in close games, especially in the Ivy League, special teams can play a huge factor. For you guys as special teamers and then in defensive backs in different ways, how do you feel the best way that special teams are able to make an impact in the Ivy League and in cross-college football?
Yeah, I think as a team we take special teams very seriously. Yeah. For me, I'm very passionate about it. It's funny about special teams. You don't really get recognized
right.
until you make a big play or you mess up. You know, so you want to be the person. You want to be the person that makes the big play. But special teams is the third of the ball.
Yeah,
you could win or lose teams in special teams. Sure. Special teams. If you don't have a good special teams unit, you're not going to win many games. You know, like a couple of our games last year came down to the last second field goals. You know, like special teams is one of the most is a very important part of football. We know that, we take it very seriously. We train with it every day. We have special teams meetings about 3 times a week at 7 a.m. Like we take it more seriously than we take it very seriously.
I think as Brett was mentioning, there's an incredible amount of buy-in on the team on special teams, and. People work hard on it because it. At first, they feel like it's a window into playing, yeah. and then like people like Brett and I, where yeah, we get some time on defense, but you know we make our money playing right. on special teams, and we take pride in that.
Yeah.
And you know, to most people who know football, special teams is all about momentum, mm-hmm. and it can really change a game. It can really change the geography of a game, yeah. and if you do it right. It's really hard to play against a team that has great special teams. It is, you know, completely demoralizing when, you know, okay, your defense gets a three and out on a team, but then they pin you on your 1 yard line, and then their defense gets a one and out. That's like a turnover. And we call Brett Grit Stewart because he's all about grit, and that's what special teams is it's all about grit because you don't get the recognition, but
yeah.
everyone knows in the program how important it is, and we take that seriously.
What you think about just the emotional aspect of the game. In my opinion, some of the times that the sideline gets the most excited is on a big special teams tackle. If, you know, it's an open guy decides that he's going to field it 2 or 3 yards deep and take it out, and you guys pin him down at the 8 yard line, or like you mentioned, you know, you blast a punt and you pin him down at the 1, people go nuts. And for you guys, that's got to be an amazing feeling.
Yeah. Special teams is the first play of the game.
Yeah.
It's either a kickoff or a kickoff return. You know, you set the vibe for the game. If you make a big play, like your team's fired up, that's how the game's going to go. If you kind of screw up, it's a little shaky at that point. You know, you bring back the opening the kickoff for a touchdown, that's awesome. You know, if you're in KOR, of course, but yeah, it's a big momentum setter. So that's what we try to do. We try to steer the team in the right direction by making plays, by trying to get a good field position for their offense.
Yeah, like Brett was saying, I think it really is a spark plug for the whole yeah. team. And, you know, maybe a little bit different than defense and offense, yeah, we of course we scheme up special teams, but really, like, we it's all about energy and effort on special teams. So, like, you see 11 guys out there giving it their 100% every play. It's exciting to watch as a team, and you get involved because you see these guys working their butts off. Yeah. And, I mean, it's great for team morale if you do it right.
Do you guys have, like, a favorite part of special teams? That, you know, obviously you guys are also play defensive back and stuff like that, but is there a part of flying down the field and making that huge tackle that kind of trumps making, like, a hit when playing defense?
I love kickoff. Kickoff is what I live for, seriously. That's why I play football. Actually, my claim to fame right now is sophomore year at Cornell. I had, like, my biggest kickoff hit. I got special teams player of the week that year, that week. I still think about it. Every time I run down, I'm like, I'm going to get another one of those. I'm going to get another one of those. But Tavish Rice is doing a great job this year. Now he's I'm not sure what his touchback percentage is, but, like, he's booting it right now. I kind of don't like when he gets a touchback, though, because, you know, it doesn't really give you an opportunity to make a tackle. But Tavish is doing a good job, and he keep doing what he's doing. And
I love kickoff, too. I'm a contained player on kickoff. Okay. So, and a lot of the time, my friends on the inside run down faster than I do and make the tackle. So I would say probably pump block. I love pump block because there's nothing more demoralizing to another person than not being able to get off the line and get down to you know, tackle your punt returner. And, like, you can hear guys saying, like, oh, dang it, oh, God, oh. And it's just hearing that, you can feel, like, the life sink out of them.
Well, so we'll touch on both of those points. First, Brett, with you mentioned Tavish. Now, when you guys get into Ivy League play, it bumps up to the 40-yard line. It makes your job a little bit easier to the point where you don't have to necessarily make the open field tackles, but it probably takes away a little bit from that ability to get that big hit.
Yeah. I hope he gets a little less leg strength, actually, you know, because that's the best part of football. You know, the opening kickoff, you run down there, the emotions are high, you know. It's just when you're running down there on the first kickoff, your butterflies are there. Yeah. You're feeling it, you're running down. When it goes out of the back of the end zone, you're like, God dang it. But when we catch it on maybe the 2-yard line, starts getting out, you're like, oh, here we go.
Well, especially with the new rule in all of NCAA where anything fair catch anywhere inside the 25 brings it out to the 25. Mm-hmm. I do think we'll probably see less kickoff returns in Ivy League play. Tavish has an incredible leg and for a lot of games that make sense for us, but we do scheme it up where you know, maybe let's try and pin them. And we have an incredible, you know, faith in our team. So maybe we'll get to run down a couple more.
You mentioned being contained on pump block. You see so many flags on holdings from that area. What for you, what is the one, like, kind of check that you make sure to know that, all right, I don't want to get flagged, so if we do get a big return, it's not coming back?
Yeah, that's a great point, because that is a dangerous zone to be in. You know, there's a little bit of leniency on, like, a change of possession play. So, you know, if you get inside on their pads, no one's going to call that. But the second they start getting some separation and your arms start to extend, you see any jersey pull, you want to lean off of that. And I think we do a great job. We train this every week, this technique. And so, like, you start seeing jersey pull, you get off, and then you re-engage. And it's an easy check, but, of course, in the heat of the moment, it's hard. And that's an incredible way to take, you know, flag out of your, wind out of your sail, is if you get a penalty.
Well, we're going to take our second break here on the Bob Saray Show. Eli and Brett are going to stick with us for one more segment. That's next on the Princeton IMG Sports Network.
It's time to talk Princeton football. Live from the Alchemist and Barrister in beautiful Princeton, New Jersey, with the Bob Saray Show. Here's Cody Cruchel and your Princeton Tigers football head coach, Bob Saray, on Fox Sports 920 The Jersey.
Welcome back to the Bob Saray Show here at the Alchemist and Barrister at Princeton, New Jersey. Pat McCarthy sitting in for Cody Cruchel. We are joined by Eli Stern and Brett Stewart, seniors for the Princeton Tigers football team. So, guys, we've talked about more of the X's and O's. Let's get into you guys a little bit. Eli, we'll start with you. Economics major, but the interest in film. Take us through that a little bit.
Yeah, so I study economics at here at Princeton, as well as creative writing. But my passion is with filmmaking, and I write and direct, I act, and I kind of grew up in it from L.A., so seemed like a decent path or some some sort of a rational path for me, more rational than some other people. I've been doing that, trying to do it on the side as much as I can. Of course, you know, football, I can at school. So that's hopefully where I'm heading.
Do you have a certain area of film, like, or we talk about screenwriting and stuff like that and directing, but in genre in film that interests you the most?
Yeah, that's a hard question just because so many of the great movies now are, like, basically genreless, but some directors that I emulate, you know, Edgar Wright with his like visual comedy and action, and Christopher McQuarrie, who does the most recent Mission Impossible ones, has some incredible practical stunts and stuff. So stuff like that. I love Scorsese. I love Spielberg, Tarantino. So that's what I'm looking at.
Brett, political science major, politics, but not necessarily the path that you want to go in. Take us a little bit through your background and how that started and then where you wanted to go.
Yeah, so my freshman and sophomore years, I was experimenting with classes. I took a couple politics classes, and I did well in them. So I'm like, all right, so this might be my major. But I don't think that's really what I want to go into for the rest of my life. We were actually just talking about this on the walking over here. I want to stay with the game of football. I don't want to play, obviously, but I want to. We were talking about how game day is almost like a drug.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's nothing really like nothing like game day, and I don't want to get away from football. So I want to be in the football field somehow. Whether it's a scout, maybe it's in the front office or something. I just want to be around. I'm not really sure exactly at this point, but I just want to be around the sport.
Coming to Princeton, you guys get teammates from all different backgrounds, New York, California. How do you guys all mesh together knowing that you guys are coming from completely different areas of life, but you all come together to join one team?
It's really interesting. I actually talk about this all the time because I want to write a TV show about it, but the kind of conversations and perspectives you get in the locker room is incredible because it's really kind of a microcosm for the whole world, and you get every different possible perspective from every inch of the U.S. And I mean, I have best friends here that don't share any, you know, whether it's political, religious, any kind of viewpoints with me, and that's an incredible, you know, growth opportunity for me as a person, and I cherish it fully. And it's incredible to see people like that with different ideologies, different beliefs, coming from different places, coming together for a common goal. It's a really powerful thing.
I think getting to know everybody on the team was so easy for me. Because, you know, we're all football players. You know, like, we're all in the locker room. We're all sharing the same grind together. That really brings you together. You know, you're in the same locker room for, 6 months of the year. You know, you're with each other for so long, and you just form bonds. You know, like, when I was the first year, I didn't even ask where people were from. Like, I didn't care or anything. I was just like, oh, that's a good guy I'm talking to. You know, going through the fire training camp with him. That's how you get a really strong bond going. You know, we talk about brotherhood a lot here, and that's where it forms. It forms in the locker room. It forms on the field. You know, that the trust grows. So personally, for me, it was really easy to, you know, get to know everybody. Eli was actually the first person I saw on this campus on a recruiting visit. He told me he was from L.A. I'm like, oh, this kid's probably a little soft. But no. Me and Eli are really close friends right now.
Well, you mentioned the recruiting trip. Take us through the recruiting process as a whole to end up choosing Princeton. Maybe what other options did you had and what ultimately drew you to coming here?
A funny story. I actually got in trouble on a recruiting trip because I was telling a story on the sideline while they were practicing. And that was my first my first run-in with the law, basically. So the recruiting process to Princeton, I didn't think I was going to play football until junior year of high school. Both Brett and I were high school quarterbacks.
Right.
And I didn't think that I was going to play as a quarterback. I started, you know, talking to some coaches, playing at some camps. And actually, Coach Thomas, who's here, saw me at the Stanford camp where I was playing wide receiver. And he talked to me, and I hadn't even thought about Princeton at that point. I'd never been out here, he was really nice to me, and I was like, okay, let's do it. Let's take a trip out. And I got here, and I had a great camp, and I really meshed with the coaching staff. I thought they were great. I loved the campus. How could you not? And I really just felt at home. And after that, I knew it was my number one. I got recruited elsewhere. But I always knew that this was the place. And somewhere in that process, they're like, we might try you with defense. I was like, great. I just want to be here. I don't care where you put me.
Yeah, so my recruiting experience is actually pretty funny. When I was when I was in 9th to 10th grade, I didn't really try much in high school. You know, like I had like an 88 average around there. I was like middle of the pack. And then I got a recruiting letter from Princeton. So I'm like, Princeton's sending me a recruiting letter right now? Like I can do something like that. So from that day forward, like I got my stuff together. I started my study grind, and I had to get my average up because it was lower. So I had like a 95 for my junior and my senior year of high school. And then after that, they're like, that's not enough. You can't come here with that. Like, your SATs aren't high enough. I'm like, damn, like, okay. Like, what am I going to do to get here? Because when I went on the recruiting visit with Eli, I think it was a junior day, I saw the campus. That was my first time on campus. I absolutely fell in love with it. I was here. I was walking around in awe. Like, you know, my jaw dropped. And as I left, I was telling my dad, like, this is the school I'm going to go to. Like, no matter what I do, like, this is where I'm going to go to school. Like, I'm going to do whatever I can to do it. So they said I couldn't come here after my senior year, so I had to take a postgraduate year up in Deerfield, Massachusetts. I'm really young for my grade. I'm October 16, 1996, so like I graduated in 2014, so I was really young. And I went to Deerfield to grow a little bit, to grow physically and to get my SAT scores up. I got my SAT scores up about 200 points, and they're like, hey, you're good to go. Like, if you want to come here, you can. I'm like, yes, I committed on the spot immediately. That was like one of the best days of my life.
You guys both come from football backgrounds. How has your family and their experiences in football helped you guys get to the point where you guys are at?
Yeah, so my dad played his freshman year at Yale.
Okay.
Just his freshman year. But we've always been a football household, and I grew up in it. It was never a thought not to be playing football. Played flag football since I was a little kid, you know, middle school, high school. And it helps. I mean, coming from my mom always jokes, Jewish mothers don't do well with football players. But they've been just an incredible support system for me, and, you know, through injuries, through, you know, the highs and the lows, it's really been helpful to have that kind of support system, and I'm really grateful.
Yeah, so I come from a football family. My dad actually, my grandpa on my mom's side actually played for the Bears for a year, and then he went up to play Canadian football for a bunch of years. My dad played played high school football. My brother played high school football. So I knew that I was going to like play. I wanted to play football in college. I just wasn't sure what level yet.
Well, Brett, Eli, we appreciate you guys taking the time and joining us today here on the Bob Cerace Show. Good luck this weekend against Lehigh, and wish you guys the best of luck.
Thanks
in the
so
future.
Much. Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you so much for having us. Really appreciate it.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, special teams coach Stephen Thomas stops by. That's next on Fox Sports 920 The Jersey and the Princeton IMG Sports Network.
You're listening to the Bob Cerace Show, live from the Alchemist and Barrister, with Princeton football head coach Bob Cerace and Cody Cruchel on Fox Sports 920 The Jersey.
Welcome back to the Alchemist and Barrister, the Bob Cerace Show. Cody Cruchel is out today. Pat McCarthy joining you today. And we are joined by special teams coach Stephen Thomas. And, Coach, well, the second time here, joining us here on the Bob Cerace Show. You were here a couple weeks ago talking about the linebackers. So we're going to talk a little special teams today and the impact that it has on a game, because a lot of times special teams might get overlooked, but it plays such a huge part in the game. And especially we were talking with Brett and Eli about the momentum of special teams. Take us through that a little bit. And as a coach, how that gets you fired up when your special teams makes a big play.
Well, it's a very important phase of the game. We try to preach the importance of the kicking, the punting, all those aspects. We make a big point to say that the first play of every game is a special teams play. And it's funny that you mentioned that momentum. That's kind of was one of the mantras going into one of the years, talk about momentum, using special teams to either create momentum, capitalizing on a positive play of a touchdown, or trying to change the swing of the momentum in terms of if a team scored us, blocking an extra point, or taking now the ensuing kickoff back, or putting us in a favorable field position for our offense. So we really try to manage those situations and really try to, let me say, win the game within the game and the field position stuff.
the opening game opener against Columbia. On that first kick, they take it back 95 yards. But the defense then kind of bails it out, and they are able to just hold them to a field goal. What changed for you guys? What's kind of the dialogue on the sidelines after a big play has happened? Is it just kind of saying, all right, this is what we missed? There was a contained missed here or there? Or do you guys necessarily have to look at something and say we have to change
well,
it?
Well, the first thing is after everything settles down, we try to get the guys together who's not going out on offense or defense or whatever is happening. And then we try to communicate to find out where the breakdown was. Every team has a scheme. You know, we try to find little clues here and there. And it really comes down to who's going to execute it better. And we had some guys that had some breakdowns on that first play. They kind of hit us, kind of showed something different, ran something different on the first play. Our guys rallied to it to knock it down, and then we obviously had the opportunity to stop them on that play. But the whole process behind it was really collecting the information, finding out what are they doing. Is it something different that we planned all week, and then going from there?
So you're really in an interesting situation. You mentioned guys going out and playing offense and defense. So you have to take a collection of guys from both sides of the ball to get your special teams core together. Does that make it more difficult, or does it make it more exciting knowing that you have so many different personalities and so many different types of athletes on your side?
You really have to lock into the game. And our young men do a phenomenal job of echoing what special teams is on alert, as we say, third down. When our offense out there, we're yelling out punt alert. And so guys are yelling it from one sideline down to the other sideline in terms of offensive guys who will be sitting on the bench, defensive guys sitting on the bench. More often than not, while I'm handling special teams, I miss a lot of plays on defense and offense because my back is turned trying to ensure that the next 10 guys or 11 guys or whoever needs to be out there are ready to go. So I'm really tuned into most of the time the down and distance, and I miss a lot of plays on the field sometimes.
Talk a little bit about Brett and Eli and the impact that they have. I mean, they seem like they just completely eat up the special teams mentality and how they get to impact a game at such a broader level than just necessarily being defensive backs and on the defensive side of the ball. But they get the chance to make a huge impact, whether it's on kickoff or punt. To have guys like that, how does it make your life easier?
You love guys that, you know, they, one, enjoy it. They embrace the challenge. They're my kind of go-to guys on special teams, as we say, core four, where the guys are on punt block, kickoff return. Having a group of those guys makes life a little bit easier. And then them being seniors, doing it for multiple years, it's kind of like having your own little captain on the field where they can help correct guys on something I may have seen, or they can relay information to me during the course of a game that someone else isn't going to be able to communicate very effectively. So they make life a little easier. And you always want guys that want to be there, that love doing it. And then obviously they don't get the much credit about that. So they're kind of like, you know, behind the scenes guys.
You guys have been banged up a little bit on the special teams, especially with the kicking game with Tavish nicked up here and there. But Nico's done a really nice job stepping in and doing the kicking. How has that been? What have you noticed from him?
Well, it's a unique situation. Most teams will probably travel a punter and a kicker.
Yeah.
We've been fortunate enough that we've taken a guy that's done kickoff, a guy that's done field goals, and we have a punter. It's a great thing for those guys because it really forces those guys really to work together. You know, typically there's a competition and one guy wants to be better than the next guy. And we kind of have this team mentality where, hey, Tavish has a great kickoff. Nico and those guys are like, hey, good job. You know, then Nico goes out there and hits a field goal and Tavish is like, good job. So, you know, we have a little camaraderie amongst the group and it's more of a team mentality. And so it works in our favor. And we try to preach that culture of, hey, everyone's a part of this team.
Austin Carbone's done a nice job on the kick return as well. So another guy that's really stepped up, he's his track champion. And having a quick guy like that out there, that's got to be a nice luxury.
As we say, Austin Carbone from Dallas, Texas. That's what we talk about. If you met Austin, you know exactly what I'm saying by that. It's kind of like his little southern twang deal. He's another one that was a freshman last year, showed flashes of his return ability. We knew he had the speed. Had a great training camp and took the opportunity. He had a great return. He had a couple great returns in the first week versus Butler. And as we got closer and closer to league games and we got into league games, we kicked from the 40, teams aren't giving us the opportunity to return the ball. But we're confident in his ability. We know he has home run ability. And so we're just looking for that one opportunity where Austin can take it from one goal line to the other goal line, and we're celebrating.
Well, you mentioned the difference in the kickoffs between non-league play and league play. How does that change? How does your coaching, the way you coach guys change, knowing that there's a much greater chance that it's going to be a touchback when you're playing in Ivy League games, just because you are kicking from the 40 and then adjusting back when you're in these non-league games.
Well, there's a couple of things. Well, number one, before the new rule was instituted even about the fair catch, when we were from the 35, most kickers were putting it to the goal line, maybe inside, but usually in front. So it was giving you a chance to return. When it was from the 40, most kickers have the leg just knock it straight out the end zone. So we were getting touchbacks. Now that we have in-league, out-of-league, almost everything is either being fair caught or touchback and brought to the 25. So our approach is 35, 40, whatever it is, we're probably going to have the ball in 25 yards. And we treat it all the same. We practice it. If it's in a situation where it's too deep, we just say, okay, we're just going to take a knee off here, catch it.
People, if they get to the game early, they see you flying around the field during pregame and stuff like that. Is that just getting you hyped, or are you just trying to help guys out?
I kind of walk around. I try to make sure that I'm interacting with everyone over there on the field. You got to make sure that the punter's punting correctly, the kicker's kicking correctly, the snapper's snapping correctly, all the little things that no one pays attention to. You know, when you coach one side of the ball, you just don't realize how much work goes into these guys, these specialists. But it's really just to get a feel of your players, how they're taking on the game day atmosphere, what's their state of mind prior to the game. Do you need to pick them up? Do you need to just, you know, pat them on the back and let them go? Do you need to just, hey, pull off the reins and say, hey, go get it? And so it's really just kind of getting a feel for your players before the game.
For you as a coach, what's like the one thing that gets you the most excited on the sidelines when your guys make a big play?
When we make a good play, what gets me excited?
Yeah.
I like seeing our guys embrace each other. I like to see our guys celebrating with one another. It isn't for me. They're playing for each man that they're playing next to. And when a guy makes a great play and he taps his buddy on his helmet, or he punches them in the chest or something like that, and that's that true, genuine enthusiasm, that's what gets it for me, because then I know they're enjoying it in the moment. And they're going to have those memories for the rest of their lives.
Stephen Thomas, special teams and linebackers coach here for Princeton University. We appreciate you taking the time and joining us. Coach, good luck this weekend.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Bob Cerace comes back right after this on the Bob Cerace Show on Fox Sports 920 The Jersey and on the Princeton IMG Sports Network.
It's time to talk Princeton football. Live from the Alchemist and Barrister in beautiful Princeton, New Jersey, with the Bob Cerace Show. Here's Cody Cruchel and your Princeton Tigers football head coach, Bob Cerace, on Fox Sports 920 The Jersey.
Back here at the Alchemist and Barrister in Princeton, New Jersey. Pat McCarthy in for Cody Cruchel this weekend as we get all set for Princeton and Lehigh. Tigers 3-0 right now and taking on their final non-conference opponent of the season in the Lehigh Mountain Hawks. So, Coach, let's get all set up for this weekend against Lehigh. It's the final non-league game. For you guys, how does that kind of shift your preparation? You get one Ivy League game. Now you get a break before that final sprint.
Yeah, I think it's a little different than other sports where they play a number of games. And the non-conference is to prepare them for the conference. We only play 10 games. We don't have playoffs, so we've tried to schedule playoff-type teams. Lehigh's certainly one of them in our non-conference schedule. And, I don't look at it as a break. I look at it, we had 10 opportunities. Yep. Our guys work so hard for these 10 games, and we're looking at every game the same. We won't treat them different than we treat playing Penn at the end of the year.
Lehigh is a team that at 1-3 but has played a really tough schedule, including one Ivy League team in Penn, another being Navy, who in the FBS. So you look at their record and it's kind of like, okay, this should be a not an easy game, because no game is easy by any means, but a game that the Tigers should win. But when you look at this team on paper, it's a very good team and a team that competes in the Patriot League every single year. So for fans that maybe looking at this and thinking one thing, what should they be looking out for?
Yeah, and we've struggled historically against them. Yeah. They put up big numbers. Last time we played them, they had 621 yards against us. They got an exceptional running back. He's a preseason All-American, was an All-American last year. He's a Player of the Year candidate. He's rushed for over 3,500 yards entering the year. He has 500 yards receiving. He's a future NFL-type player. As good a runner as we've seen in my 9 years here, and big, physical, athletic, track star in high school as well. He's 230 pounds. Their quarterback is another guy being looked at by the NFL, is a drop-back quarterback who does a good enough job in the run game, and he's doing a great job, you know, really deceptive with the football. And really, you know, if you don't play your responsibilities, he's taken off for 10-yard runs. But really his biggest, you know, he's a terrific thrower. He's a great drop-back passer. They've always had good receivers. This is a deeper group where in the past maybe there was the one guy. You had to stop Spadola or whoever was out there. This is a group where if you just put your attention to one guy, they're going to beat you other places. They spread the ball around. And I think it's as good a defense as we've played from Lehigh. They've played well all year, you know, on defense. And they've had some turnovers, and that hurt them in the Penn game. But their defense really tightened up and kept that a literally a one- or two-score game when it could have been worse early in the game.
Penn was able to get to Mays seven times last week. Mm-hmm. For you guys defensively, is that something that you are now keeping your eye on, is coming up with different schemes that are going to allow you to get that kind of pressure?
Yeah, you always want to disrupt the quarterback. And in that, anytime it's a throwing team, you want to disrupt the quarterback. And the more you can do that, and maybe if you do it 10 times and put him under duress, maybe one time he throws it to you and you make a play, or you have a sack or sack fumble that gets you the ball back. But that is, you know, such an important part of the game. And, you know, as you saw in the Monmouth game at home, anybody that was there, we really disrupted their quarterback at times. And if we can get him into passing situations and disrupt him, we have a better chance of getting off the field.
Ways to get off the field are turnovers. Against Columbia, you guys were able to force a lot of turnovers, and offensively, you're not turning the ball over. Is that something that you guys have really focused on? Because you know that games in the Ivy League come down to one or two possessions potentially. So, you know, one final question before, you know, we wrap things up here for you guys. What have you noticed in terms of defensively getting turnovers and offensively maybe keeping the ball?
Yeah, I knock on wood when you say that, but that's been an emphasis since day one. First day of practice. The day before the first day, we talked about it. We went out and we practiced it. It's been something we do every day. Defensively, it is turnover circuits. Offensively, it's ball security and decision making. And that has been an everyday thing. And, you know, right now we're doing a great job with it. But the second you forget about it and you let the guy slip is the game where you lose that turnover battle 3-0, and you make it very difficult. Your chances of winning go down, you know, to about 10%.
The Alchemist and Barrister is proud to host the Bob Saray Show every Thursday night. Join us each week for the latest Princeton football team and enjoy drinking food specials all night. Check out the menus at amb.com. Well, Coach, we appreciate you taking the time and joining us here at the AMB, and good luck this weekend against Lehigh. Should be a great test, and then that final sprint to the Ivy League.
Yeah, we're both kind of baseball guys. What a great job as a pinch hitter, man. I want you sitting there with the bat in your hands ready to come in the ninth inning. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. This weekend's game against the Mountain Hawks, check out more information. Go to GoPrincetonTigers.com. You can catch the game on ESPN+ and on NBC Sports Philadelphia. Once again, thanks to our guests, of course, head coach Bob Cerace, Eli Stern, Brett Stewart, and special teams coach Stephen Thomas. Well, we're going to get you all set up for Lehigh this weekend there at Princeton Stadium. But thanks for listening, everybody. This has been the Bob Cerace Show on Fox Sports 920 The Jersey and the Princeton IMG Sports Network.